It is episode 42.
42!
Of Diplomacy Cast.
I'm very excited about episode 42.
Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. My name is Eric Mead.
And I am ever Nathan Barnes.
He's excited.
I am excited. I'm pumped. 42. No one thought we'd make it this far.
You've said that like every episode for the last 7.
It's still true.
I know. And literally, like, I didn't think we'd make it this far every single time. We're going to talk to you today about, well, some stuff. Some diplomacy stuff.
We're going to talk about diplomacy.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about...
we've got a little power plays segment.
Yep.
Oh, we forgot to do the song.
What song?
At the beginning. Like, we forgot to play the intro into myself. Oh, well, the good times are over. We have no editor. We've jumped the shark. Whatever. Hi, everybody.
4, 3, 2, 1. Deadline.
Anyway, well, so much for our smooth, clean intro there. Today we're going to talk about, we're going to do power plays.
Yeah.
And in that power plays, we're going to talk about how to play without as many pieces as you might otherwise.
Yeah, we're talking about playing short.
Not having so many dots as you might have.
Yeah, by choice.
You'll understand.
It'll make sense.
And then as soon as we're done with that, we're going to just not even read your emails or anything because, you know, they're basically all about how you were fooled by the last episode for like a really long time. Like, it was just like trying to like one-up each other about like, I listened to like 50 minutes of the episode before I realized it was the April Fool's Day. No, there's probably some good emails in there and we're not reading them today because like the show is too packed. We're gonna do some mailbag next time.
We'll do some mailbag, and then we're gonna talk to Jim O'Kelly.
Jim,
who is a great guy. He's leader of the Windy City Weasels, and they are hosting the World Diplomacy Championships June 24th, 5th, and 6th.
Which is holy cow, any day now.
I know. I love this from the recording date. It's 42 days, just like our episode, 42.
Oh my god, that is intense, man. That's actually really stupid.
Oh my god, no, that's so meaningful. Illuminati.
But no, so
you know,
the great Jim O'Kelly, who is doing all of the amazing stuff to make this tournament possible, and I hope that all of you listeners have actually purchased your tickets, reserved your rooms, but if not, you can learn a little more about it.
Drop it. Drop what you're doing. Do it now. Because we'd love to see you. We're going to have a booth set up. We're going to be doing autographs. I got my glossies all ready, they're not headshots.
We'll be signing individual episodes, so just bring whichever one you want, and we'll sign it. And
we definitely have pictures that we'll sign, and they're not of our heads. So
that's right, and we can just text them to you if it's easier.
It's cool.
Just let us know.
It's cool.
All right,
we're gonna talk about this.
We are diplomacycast@gmail.com. We are facebook.com/diplomacycast.
We're on iTunes.
You gotta subscribe to us there. You gotta say nice things about us on iTunes because then we will rise up the ranks of all of the competing diplomacy podcasts and bang, you'll find us first when you search for diplomacy podcasts.
Boom. So here is our power plays.
Power plays.
Yeah, good editing by us there. Good editing.
Boop.
Done. Ship it.
Ship it. Perfect. No, so today we're going to talk a little bit about playing short. And this comes in a variety of forms. But the one that I'm excited to talk about is early game foregoing builds in 1901.
Okay.
For tactical reasons. That's what I'm excited to talk about. What are you excited to talk about, Eric?
It wasn't even about diplomacy, but your thing is like so much more exciting. I'm just talking about baseball, man.
It's actually baseball? Wrong podcast. That's our other podcast. Mm. So I'm excited to talk about it because it comes up every once in a while. It comes up as there's a variety of countries that experience this. Italy often foregoes Tunis in 1901. France will sometimes forego an Iberian
supply center and in 1901.
What do we mean when we say Fergo? I mean, I know you're on a roll here, but
oh no, I mean
we just mean like the idea of there's like these certain centers that everybody is like, oh yeah, you get that one, right?
Right.
Like the obvious neutrals that every country takes. We're talking about not taking those, and so the reason that you're not taking them is because you're going to do something even better.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of times these are things that are sort of, they're important to take typically because you need to get a little bit beyond your initial three or four.
Mm-hmm.
So England almost always takes Norway.
Yeah.
Germany almost always takes Denmark.
Yeah.
Russia.
And
almost,
Holland.
And Holland. Russia always takes
Romania?
Romania. Maybe, usually goes for it.
One. This one might not be much about Russia.
It might not be much about, but I mean, like, there. I'm just giving you examples of things. I mean,
Turkey always takes Bulgaria.
Yeah, except that doesn't really count. You can't ever forego it.
You can if you walk on to Serbia somehow or Greece or something. No,
you
that,
could.
That one counts.
You could if
you always
somehow
go to Bulgaria in the spring. But
yeah,
you could
leave.
Yeah.
You could
leave.
Maybe you'll pick up Romania or something.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with the base case, I guess.
Well, my favorite is Italy.
Okay. The base case is nobody else can even physically reach Tunis, right? In the entirety of 1901. Also, it's the only obvious center that you can take as Italy unless
yeah.
you...
It's your only guarantee.
It's your only guaranteed center. So why on earth would a rational, right-thinking human being not take Tunis in 1901? You
because
gotta
it's
know.
Awesome.
Okay.
That's why.
All right. Sell it
the
to
reason,
me.
The reason that you would forego it is... You have a line on Greece. You're getting Greece, and you're going to convoy an army, or you're going to, I guess you could put a fleet there, but generally, you're convoying an army into Greece, and you know it's going to happen, because you need to have four. I mean, as Italy, if you don't have four, you got to build.
You
definitely got to, because otherwise, you're already prone as that country to get sidetracked and sort of bogged down. So you need to grow. This scenario only works when you got a guarantee into Greece, and you'll know. You listeners know when they have this guarantee. Turkey is like, I really want this to happen, or Austria for some weird reason is like, I think you should be here because I got a Russia that wants to do this weird thing. Whatever it is, you getting in there and convoying ideally an army from Tunis into Greece and saving that build for who knows when. Is
right.
amazing because you constantly have this sort of backup that you can get to at almost any time. And once you get past the initial year, and if you could do it for another year, then it's just in your pocket. You're just waiting until something like gets difficult and you're like, I just gotta get another build. And it's a thrilling experience to have.
Okay, but it's also incredibly risky, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like you just kind of, I feel like you just kind of glossed over the part where like you'll just know when it's right to No, you'll lose your mind in follow one when you're actually thinking I'm going to take this risk right now. Right?
Yes. Okay. Like, to be fair, I am selling all the fun part of it.
Yeah. So my point is, you have to know the situation if you're going to do something like this. You can't just go,
you can't do it on a lark.
I'm just going to try for Greece instead. Because you're not going to get that, right? Austria's probably sporting himself in under normal circumstances. Maybe, like, Turkey's going for it. Like, something's happening in Greece. So what you obviously need to achieve something like this diplomatically. And you have to have somebody else who wants you there for some reason. You have to sell them on... And by doing that, you're taking the risk that now they know you're trying for it and they can just screw you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So how do you, I guess maybe, how do you know which time to try for it and which time not to?
Well, you don't try for it in a situation in which Austria has no pressure on them.
Okay.
If they're just, if they've opened in one of the more popular openings in face-to-face diplomacy, which is, you know, they go to Serbia,
and
Albania. If that has happened and there's no pressure to the north, like, you know, there's no Russian presence, and Turkey and Russia maybe are just at each other's throats and Austria is just fine.
Right.
then that's not a time to do it because there's no reason for Austria to do anything else. You want to do this when Austria is really just in a position that they're getting pressured initially.
Right.
And Turkey is perhaps looking for a way to take Austria out quickly. That's a great opportunity to do this.
I would say that the time that I have seen that particular thing happen the most is when Austria senses an impending Turkey-Russia thing and says, oh my God, we have to put a stop to this right now, and says, like, we need the extra army. Then the plan is we have to just immediately... We can't waste the tempo for you to take Tunis. We have to immediately get you up to Greece, so that we have this united front. The thing to be careful of in that situation, on a total aside, the thing to be careful of in that situation is that you're not, like, creating an RT. Because that's an obvious AI move, and then RT might do the same thing and go, oh my God, there's an AI. We have to work together. Yeah. Like, you have to be right that there is an RT when you do something like that.
Which is hard to determine in literally one season.
Right. So when I'm Italy and we have that on our menu of moves, I tend to just be like, I don't know, man. Why don't I just take Tunis and see what happens? And sometimes I regret that and sometimes I don't. But you're here to sell us on...
The reason I get excited about it is that I'm a person that has played a lot of diplomacy.
Yeah.
And I enjoy situations, especially openings, that really sort of...
push it.
They push it. They explore slightly different things, and they're like... There's an unappreciated value to... doing things that throw the rest of the board off. Like, oh, he's really doing that. Especially things that aren't unprecedented and just wacky, but things that, like, could actually work and have worked, but are hard to do.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I wanted to chat about this, because it presents an opportunity that I think players should be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
The time, like, this... 80-90% of the time, these are the things that we're going to talk about in this segment are not going to happen.
Yeah,
because they're too risky. They're just not going to. They're just the chips have fallen in a way that make them impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tool in your tool belt, right?
Right.
It's a thing that you should be on the lookout for, because the rewards, should it go well, are pretty hefty.
Right.
Like you take a country like. Take, like, France.
Yeah.
Like, you look at France...
This is the other obvious one that jumps out right away, right?
You forego one of the Iberians, Portugal, or you walk through Spain to get Portugal, and you leave Spain empty.
This one is a little different, because unlike Italy, who has Tunis or nothing, France has, like, so many possible 1901... It's like an embarrassment of riches, and they can just afford to... skip one or even skip two.
Yeah, if
under
you
the right situation.
As long as you build one somewhere, you're probably fine.
You're probably fine.
As France,
and no one's attacking you.
And so you're, as a consequence, you're more likely to have the opportunity to play with this.
Yeah.
For France, and you might accidentally find yourself doing this. But if you're just getting Belgium,
right?
And neither of the I.
That's the risky one right there.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the risky one.
Because then when are you ever going to get around to, like, going back the other way and taking the Iberians?
But the fact that you can pick up Spain's south coast, literally, it borders Marseille.
Right.
You can pick it up easily later. And while most people intellectually understand that you are playing short and that there is a dot that you haven't picked up yet... And they know that, and it shows it on the supply center chart.
Yeah.
When you look at the board, you've seen the board layout so many times that you just sort of, like, part of you deep down just assumes that piece is taken, and you don't realize, someone looking at it doesn't really realize, like, how much bigger that France is going to be at any given moment.
Yes.
Like it's a mental thing, and you might know it intellectually, but your heart doesn't
So
I mean, yeah. I'm not articulating this well, but
no, I understand. So the point is like the thing about like I think we've had other people on the show argue before that like Portugal and Spain are just the wrong way. Like, yeah, they're dots, but they're dots that like you go that way, and you're just marching the wrong way, right? Like you're just going away from where you actually need your pieces to be, just to take dots to build more things that could have already been there.
Exactly.
Right.
There's a momentum advantage to foregoing Spain, South Coast, or Portugal.
Right. All of these things that we're talking about are really tempo plays.
Right.
Right. They're really like in that like chess sense of, mm-hmm. of like, I could go there and take that thing, but the energy that I'm expending doing that, what else could I have done? Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe I look weaker, but actually I'm stronger. Another one that comes to mind that isn't a dot, but comes to mind right away is if the English player like opens standard, you know, like Yorkshire, North Sea, Norwegian Sea, something like that, and then chooses to forego any interest in the continent, just takes Norway and then moves to the Barents Sea also.
Yeah.
It's not a dot one, but that's a tempo play right there.
Right.
That's something you're like, where you're like, whatever, like do what you guys want on the continent. I'm attacking Russia and that's all I'm damn doing. You know?
Right.
And that's risky, right?
Because you've just
like foregone a lot of like your strength that could have been other places. And you hope that, you know, the time that you do that is if your sense is that France and Germany are either not working together or both working with you, i.e. a Western triple. Like, you'll have no pressure.
Yeah.
If you do it that way. And so all of these things are judgment calls. All of these things, like France choosing not to go very far into Iberia, if they go into Iberia at all, it's a judgment call. Like, am I going to need that piece somewhere else? Could I use that piece somewhere else?
Or is this, I mean, and this is the essence of tempo, is it more important to have those pieces that need to be devoted to taking a dot elsewhere?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, you have, like, it just makes, it's a bigger advantage for you to be there.
Here's another one that I just thought of, going back to your Italy example. Screw Greece, never mind Greece. The biggest tempo play of all that you can do if you're doing this AI like quick kill thing. Okay, Italy, you really need a build. Fine. Austria says just take Trieste.
Yeah.
Just walk your army into Trieste. Take that. But don't take Tunis. Sail straight into the Aegean.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Exactly.
There's some tempo. Right there. There's a, like, you're already in the Aegean. Like, and presumably Austria's in Greece and Serbia and yuck.
Right? And Turkey is hosed.
Right. Yuck.
If you can hold it together, Turkey is hosed.
Mm-hmm.
These are interesting ways of sort of shaking up the typical paradigm.
Yep.
Which is, you know, basically what we're interested in this episode.
Now, so the next thing, I mean, we can go through some more specifics if you want to.
Is there any other countries that are really, I mean, like France
that
and Italy
have that big tempo play?
And like there's a tempo play in Germany, and that involves just foregoing Denmark and hoping, like, sometimes you can walk through Denmark to try and get Sweden.
That one you're probably trying to bounce Russia. And then you might just wind up in Sweden, but even if you do, you don't also get that.
Fine.
So that one doesn't really count.
Well, I guess you could do a thing where you just flip, like, you just all out go towards Russia.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is the psychotic German one to do would be Denmark and then Silesia and Prussia.
Yeah, because but, you're just, like, you're
oh
all
Oh boy,
in,
don't do that one.
Yeah.
Unless...
It doesn't work very well.
Yeah, unless you're really, really sure it's
unless you got some Austrian help. Something.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
A great play.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't.
Turkey. We touched on Turkey. Like, he opens to Bulgaria, but then he might try and go somewhere from. Well,
it's not really a tempo play, though.
No, it's not,
because he's going to be in Bulgaria no matter what. Because he literally has nowhere else to go.
I guess maybe the Russian one would be again in the north there. if he says, to heck with Sweden, I'm not even going to try for it. I don't think I'm going to get it anyway. You go to Barents. Goes to Baltic.
Sorry, I was thinking.
That would be something like that. But that's more of like a spite thing than like a calculated, like...
Usually don't do that move in coordination with a Western advance. You don't usually go to Baltic and send
screw Warsaw. Germany. He's exactly. not going to let me have Sweden anyway.
Exactly. Let's see if we can throw him off by having him be in Sweden and have Denmark open.
Yeah.
So
now the thing that I was going to get to for
him is
when you do a thing like that, you are gaining tempo, but there's another downside to it in addition to the fact that it's risky. There's the it's risky part, but then there's also the part where if you're playing with good players, and even if the diplomatic situation was right, and even if it gains you something tactically, you're going to cause a reaction.
Oh yeah,
when you do something like this, if they see that fleet in the Barents when you're England or something like that, if the rest of the board sees that. Don't be surprised if all of the people that said, I'm going to help you against Russia, all of a sudden are like, ooh, we don't want Russia to die that fast.
Yep.
Maybe I'm not going to help you against Russia after all. So a lot of times these things are just better in a situation where you don't feel like you really do feel like enough people want this for some reason. Like, they just don't like the guy in Russia. Like,
sure.
He's too good, and they're like, oh, that's Dan Lester. Let's just kill him and then worry about it. Something like that. Or else he's the tournament leader. Or else some of the other people who you think probably should understand the danger that you pose there are maybe too new or not good enough at the game to really like organize much of a response. Like if you think you can just like keep everybody like cool about it. Like, yeah, oh, no, it's fine. I'm
trying something
Russia.
Different.
Trying something different. Killing Russia. It's cool. It'll be fun. It's just, don't worry about it. Like, it, on a table full of good players, they'll be like, oh my God, Russia's going to die. Everybody react to
yeah,
this.
Let's do this.
Like, yeah. So that's another situation. Like, we go through, I feel like on the show, we go through like a lot of these things that are like awesome when they're awesome.
Yeah.
And when are they awesome? Well, that depends.
You know, it's a like I was saying earlier, the reason to talk about these things is to highlight to folks like these are options and these are things that have been done before that you should consider. And then we get to this part of the segment, which I think is equally important. Like, this has been done before. Let me tell you what some of the reactions will be.
Mm-hmm.
So it will help you weigh whether or not this is appropriate. Mm-hmm. Like, if this is going to advance your game.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, the Italy one where you're in the Aegean. Hopefully Russia's okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, because Turkey's about to die, and Russia had better at least feel like he has a chance of getting some of that, or else he's just going to help the Turk, right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes you're creating a monster when you do something that aggressive because it's so good.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like,
it has the potential upside.
The potential to be so good that people are like, ugh, well, whatever I was going to do, I don't want to do it anymore because that's too good. So you just got to make sure that, like, you've talked to everybody, like, except the guy that you're actually victimizing. And you have some reason to suspect that everybody's at least a little bit on board or too confused or too self-interested or too new or too something to
don't, I guess what you're saying is don't do this too, don't make these moves lightly.
Right. Don't listen to this show and just be like, I'm going to Barents every time. That's the best move.
That's
it's
very situational.
It's right.
I think that's true. But also I will say, if you've never done it before and you think it's right and you're 50-50, just try it.
Yeah. Like,
it might blow up in your face.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it might blow up in your face, but you should at least try it to kind of experience it and do it. And
the moves are really good. That's the thing about them is that, like, even if you had experienced some adversity after the fact, like, just check out how good those moves are.
Yeah, you're like, holy crap! And like, it really does sort of open up all of these possibilities that you didn't until you're in the moment. You're like, oh,
yeah,
I guess I could do this, and then I could do this, and oh wow. And it sort of just changes your play of that country. So that's one thing I do want to recommend trying to do it.
With
that big caveat, like, it could super blow up in your face. Mm-hmm. But that's part of playing diplomacy.
Not that, like, going to the Barents is just, like, such a crushing move, right? Like,
yeah.
So you really are leaving yourself vulnerable in other places when you do something like... But if you suspect that those people don't want to hurt you,
then... Give it a whirl. Give it a whirl.
Right. Give it a whirl.
So that's the opening stuff.
Yeah.
More complicated... And we can only talk about these in broad strokes because it's hard to get too specific. But there are situations in which you will find yourself needing to or wanting to either forego a build or really waiving a build. This is sort of in this category. I know we've talked about that before, but...
Or have a season where your ally grows and you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
it all kind of fits together, like where you're like choosing to weaken yourself for some greater purpose, right?
But I think that you really struck on the heart of it. It's almost always a tempo question.
Yeah,
like there are many times, and this is a skill that takes a long time to cultivate. There are many times where position and timing is way more important than the little chart says. Strength.
Yeah. If the little chart says 7 or 8, neither of those are close to 18.
Yeah, so, exactly. It doesn't matter.
And I'm the guiltiest of this. Like, I just sort of feel like if I just plod along and build one every year, it's all going to be fine.
And then when
I get to those years where I'm like, but I'm not building this year, then I start to do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And so I hesitate on making those aggressive moves. That a lot of times are worth it. Actually, let's edit out the times that you're voluntarily doing it just to make your ally happy. Letting him get the build instead of you. Never mind those times. That's a different episode. Let's stick with the ones where you're like not taking the dot that you could take because you care more about the position.
Exactly.
Okay.
Those situations will come up, like, they're mostly stalemate driven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not. I mean, like, stalemate is definitely one of the big. You know, it's on the top five.
Mm-hmm.
There's situations in which it makes more sense for the board, as in you're going to piss off less people. Maybe you could take something, and maybe you've destroyed the situations where you've destroyed a unit of an enemy, but you walk out of it because they can't rebuild. I've popped a unit. I don't need to take this.
And also generally staying away from just early leader syndrome. Just staying away from, like, being a target because, like, you have too many dots. When you realize you're in a situation where you're like, I can come back for that
one. I can come back for that one.
Right.
Like, you should... I think it is not bad advice to universally apply to every game.
Mm-hmm.
If you can create a situation in which you have a dot behind your line that you can pick up at any time, which is which is sort of like the goal of Tunis, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, if you skip Tunis and you just have this backup just kind of hanging out back there, that is the closest to an insurance policy that you could possibly have in the game of diplomacy is a dot behind your line.
I remember when I was still learning the game, that was something that used to regularly blow my mind. When someone would, like, they'd be counting to 18... trying to get a solo on a board that I was playing on, but they're already counting the one that still belongs to that guy over there.
Yeah.
Because they know that one's theirs.
Yep.
It doesn't count. Like, you know, and I'm counting to 18 by actually trying to count the dots that they have. Like, how many do you have? You have 14. That seems like a lot. But really, they have 16 because there's two that, like, all they have to do is just get the piece there.
Yeah, they're just like, that's mine. No one else is getting that piece.
And if you're new like me and you're not paying so much attention, you might not realize, like, that they're much closer to soloing than you realized.
Yeah.
Or much closer to having, like, if it's not actually for the solo, they're much closer to having, like, an explosive turn where all of a sudden everything happens all at once. You know, like, where they're like, I could actually really use those three builds right now. Gobble. Okay. And then the three pieces come out and nobody has a response. Like, so...
Which is, you know, it feeds into other things that we've talked about in other episodes, which is, you know, just because you can take out a power, a one or two center power,
Doesn't mean you should.
Does not mean you should.
Sometimes these very dots that we're talking about that you're passing on belong to people that those are their only dots.
Yep. Man, if you can do things, there are so many fun things that you could do. Here's a goal next time, kids. Because I know I've talked about this before. Yeah. If you can strand England on their island with all armies behind your line as you just wander off.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
How much fun is that?
Nathan's heaven.
Right, I know there. that is the most.
I did it one time.
I've done it one time
to one guy, and he actually had all three of his home centers, and he had three armies, and they were all on England, and then some other son of a bitch convoyed him off, got him back in the. So what are you doing?
That was perfect. That was perfect.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's some things you can do, yeah. You know, or like holding all of Turkey with just two dots. Just be like, I'm just going to park an army in Armenia and Bulgaria.
That's right.
And yeah. I'm going to ignore you.
Yeah.
Have fun.
So I guess the more general takeaway here.
That sounds good because it really sucks to try and take those Turkish dots later.
Or ever get that piece back again if you ever decide that nobody's. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the more general takeaway is. It's a really hard skill to acquire,
yeah.
But every single time in a game that you're saying, I'm taking this dot right now, do like a little self-check at that point and go, hold on, time out. Like if you have 30 seconds, what am I going to do with this build? Am I taking this dot because I'd rather build a piece and have the extra piece and have the extra influence and you know, like deprive somebody else of that dot and this and that, you know, like those are all good reasons to take the dot. Or am I just doing it because I want to see my little number go up?
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I'm guilty of.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we all
are. I like to
are.
See my little number go up. I'm like, look, I'm doing good because I was at 5 last year and now I'm at 6 and then I will be at 7. Like, I'm doing good. But where, like, instead of going from 6 to 7, you look on the board and you're like, where else could this piece be if it wasn't currently taking this dot? And what would the consequences of that be?
And that's absolutely. And you also need to be looking at, and this is tangential advice, but like you need to know when you're taking every dot you take, I guess aside from neutrals in 01, but even then.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to build and do with that dot?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should have a plan.
Yeah.
If you find yourself during the build phase going, huh, what should I build? A fleet or an army?
Really,
where should
fleet.
I put it? What am I doing? I'm not really sure. You're doing it wrong.
I feel like Turkey, you know, maybe not in 1901, but I feel like when I'm Turkey, I find myself in the situation when I'm doing well as Turkey about 1903, 1904. Like, I take a dot, and then I'm like, oh, great. I get an army con. It's, like, way back there. It's not bordering anyone I hate right now. It's just a thing that I got, and my number agreed. Instead of taking Tunis there, what if I was in the West Med instead?
Yeah.
You know? Instead of, like maybe that's bad. Maybe I'm taking Tunis because I really want Italy to go down because he hates me. It's not so much that I want the army con. I just want him to have to pull because he hates me. And that's fine. Yeah. Take Tunis in that case. But,
sure.
But just don't automatically take Tunis.
Right. I mean, you know? The scenario you're talking about is amazing. If you're a rising Turk and you've flooded the Med with a bunch of fleets. A
couple fleets out there.
And you can hold Tunis behind the line. Like, that's... I mean, when you get into soloing and the stalemate line calculation,
mm-hmm.
having Tunis just in your back pocket, mm-hmm. not even something you're worried about, if you have the wherewithal to do that, you should definitely just leave it there so you can pick it up later.
Obviously, it's feeding an Italian dot, and you have to feel like you have some idea of what the hell that Italian piece is going to do that it's feeding. But take the time to do that.
Right.
That's like one of those soloist skills right there, is to be like, okay, I could just kill Italy right now. Instead, I'm going to ask Italy what he thinks he might do with that last piece that Tunis is feeding. Now that I've defeated Italy.
Yeah.
You know, now that I've, like, vanquished him or me.
Seriously,
and
you can
Austria
sometimes, like,
him.
Get a pirate to work with you. Like, you know, you never know. Like, a janissary can be an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's
this podcast is turning into another one of those like Eric therapy sessions about how I can get better at. I'm realizing there's so many times that I just don't do this thing that I'm telling you guys to do right now.
And that's
now.
The thing, like I super realize that in the moment this sort of advice is really hard to apply.
Yep.
And we're only talking about it so that you can like this is the first step, like getting it in your frontal lobe. Load it up, mm-hmm. and you probably will have the situation, and then you'll pass it. And, you know, it's going to be game after game after game after game, and suddenly you're like, oh, okay, no, I'm starting to see this.
Yeah.
You know, myself, I look for these situations all the time because I'm...
Because you love it.
Because I love it, but I'm also a very firm believer that you cannot plod your way to 18.
That's right.
It does not happen. You can't grow one every year and get to 18.
You can plod your way to 13, but then something has to go crazy.
You have to have this element of unknown, and it's going to happen somewhere in the game. It can happen in the early game. It can happen in the mid game. It can happen at the end game. But an unconventional thing must happen in order for there to be a solo. There's no game that I have ever seen with anybody with any competence in which... It was just I just started out and I just, as Turkey, I just gobbled one after another and suddenly I was at 18.
Right.
Does not happen.
No, suddenly you were at 14 and then everyone freaked out.
And then you're done. Right. And
no, the games you solo as Turkey are the ones where you're like, ha-ha, France went crazy. He put me in the Mid-Atlantic.
Yes.
You know, and then you work back from there. Like, I think what we're saying applies to Turkey and England especially because it's so hard to get across the line because they're so far from the line.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Austria and Germany can kind of plod their way, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, by just killing one guy completely, then killing the next guy completely, then killing the next guy completely. You know, like maybe they're close enough to the line that some of the dots they take might spill over.
I don't disagree, like, I guess as a percentage chance of plotting to victory.
Yeah.
Yes, they are certainly more likely than witches to stumble into it. But in my humble experience of 150...
There are unicorn solos.
Yeah, they just don't... Yeah. I mean, like, 200 games, however many we've played, like, they don't happen that way.
Yeah.
What happens is, like, something stupid. Like, something that is... like. We make fun of those games that end up in seven-way draws, but honestly, those are basically perfect games where everyone did what they were supposed to do.
Right, exactly.
To make sure that they aggrandize themselves as much as possible while defending themselves against everybody else.
Exactly. Yep.
Like, that's...
No chaos in those games.
And no
big results in those games. Right.
So, that's, you know, at its core, yes, I enjoy a fun, chaotic game, but it's partially, you know, 60-70% of it is because I know that there's no way for me to win without that.
Definitely. Yeah.
And that's a little, like, y'all can take that bit of advice. Go ahead and apply it to WDC. I hope you do, because... That I thrive on that. That'd be great.
Yeah,
if we could have legions of people.
Just make sure not to take Nathan's dot when it's an option. Consider a tempo play instead.
Here's the thing. Try a tempo play.
Yeah.
Do it all. That's not my point. My point is, I think that I enjoy those the tension and excitement of
what else do we want to say about this?
You know, that's about it. Like, I don't. I really just want to. This is like a lot of this is a little bit public service.
Yeah.
Like, I really want people to be thinking about these type of moves and like just. And I think you summed it up really well. You said, listen, like, make sure you're thinking about what you're taking before you just automatically write that support order.
When you take a dot, think about where else that piece might have been instead of in that dot. Contemplate that option and ask yourself, are you doing this because it's the best place for my piece to be and you really want that dot to change hands, or do you just want to see your little score go up?
Right. And like, there's nothing like... Also, like, make it a goal to make little Vatican cities all over the place, little San Marinos.
Sure.
Like, if you can just isolate dots behind you, even if there's somebody in it, like, think about the strength in that and don't be intimidated by the idea that there's some monkey back there with one dot wandering around.
People of San Marino, we don't think you're monkeys.
But, you know, like, there is... I think that a lot of players are out there, like, trying to make their map pretty.
Right.
Like, it just seems like... Another
way to say the same thing. If we haven't already beat this into the ground, that's a great way of saying it, actually. Like, I do that, too.
Right, it's like, well, that's in the way. It's not neat. It's a, yeah. There's a person back there. It should all be red or green or whatever yeah. color you want it to yeah. be. You know, don't be afraid of that. So that's our power play. That's the thing that
this isn't want. Risk, people.
This isn't risk. This is you know an idea.
Hey, speaking of WDC,
yeah,
and how you're gonna play your butt off at WDC. Try new things.
Five rounds of butt playing.
Oh,
is that what you're talking about?
No,
diplomacy wait, playing. I'm not sorry. Butt playing.
Five rounds of butt playing.
I'm sorry, I misinterpreted.
We'll edit that out. I'm not editing that out.
No, it's gonna be five rounds. It's gonna be amazing. So,
yeah, coming up to tell us about the five rounds of butt play you have to look forward to. We have Jim O'Kelly.
Jim O'Kelly.
He is joining us. He is awesome. He is going to learn y'all. Yep. About what you need to know to actually go to this damn tournament and really go to this damn tournament.
But seriously, and we're going to pound this. We're probably going to talk about this a bunch.
Yeah.
But
we're going to pound those five rounds of butt play.
I didn't make that joke because I wow. knew you would.
Wow. This episode has really gone off the rails. We need Jim to save us all instantly.
Right. Here we go.
Yeah. Right after this.
Boo-boo!
Oh, right. There's no this. Right after, okay. Here comes Jim. Joining us now,
all the way
from Chicago. I think it's Chicago. Yeah,
it's one of those weird towns in the middle.
One of those towns with lots of nicknames that probably no one ever says.
Bean Town.
Yeah, that right. The big-shouldered Jim O'Kelly is joining us. Hi, Jim.
Hey guys, it's good to be on the show. As you know, I'm a big fan. Maybe your biggest fan.
I know you're like the.
You are the biggest fan.
Yeah, you're our number one super fan, and it's getting creepy.
I've listened to every single episode, and I love them all. They're all great, but not an episode goes by where I don't think great episode. But you know what would make it better?
Yeah,
me.
Totally. That is the right attitude for a radio man.
Right. Well, right there. Right. That's kind of what it's like to be a diplomacy player. Generally, I'd say.
Good point. I like that.
Right.
So we understand.
Hey, yep. Can I, in all seriousness, can I just give Please? You guys a shout out?
Yes. Sure.
So if you ever wonder whether what you're doing is doing any good, I just want you to put this one in your reserve. So we had a guy reach out to us in January named Brian Pravel.
Okay.
He was coming up to Chicago to do some contract work, and he, you know, big fan of diplomacy. He heard about the weasels on the show. Huh? He was going to be moving here for a while. Didn't know anybody, and so he reached out to us. And
yeah.
he is like many of us who play this game. He's one of those guys who, in his circle of friends, you know, he's the guy who has this crazy passion. And
right.
so maybe he's gotten his friends to humor him, or his family to play some games, even. But mostly. He's played, you know, exclusively online.
Yeah.
And now he's played, since January, he's played 8 games with us.
Holy crap.
He's been a great addition. He's been, like, writing, you know, end game statements on our website, which is causing more people to go there and read them.
Yes.
And he's said recently after a game, he's like, you know, this is the first time where I'm with a group of people who love the game as much as I do and, you know it as well as I do. And, you know, he's loving it. And we're super happy that he's joined our group.
That makes me happy too.
Thanks to you guys.
All right. I do have one question about that, though. When you say he was in Chicago to do some contract work, do you mean like rub a guy out?
Exactly.
Okay. Has that been a problem at all for your group that he's a hired killer? Or...
Right.
That, not weird at all? Okay.
It actually works really well for the weasels.
Yeah, exactly.
Fits right in.
Wouldn't believe how often that's come in handy.
Excellent. Well, Jim, one of the reasons we want to talk to you is you have this big event coming up.
We do. We are excited to be holding for the second time in 4 years WDC, and it's coming like a freight train. I think we're about 42 days out or something like that, June 24th to 26th.
There it is, June 24th to
26th. I like the second time in 4 years. It doesn't at all sound like, I can't believe I'm doing this again.
I know.
Well, you know what? It seemed like a really good idea 2 years ago when we put our bid in. Like,
sure.
It seemed like a great idea. I know I had one kid at that time. Well,
Yeah, right.
One toddler at home. Now I've got two. And
well,
but it, you know, it's going to be our 10th weasel moot. So we thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool to make it a big one?
Yeah.
And yeah, now here we are, and it's not so cool. I mean, it's going to be great.
It's going to be no, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to be cool. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're excited about it. But it's also a lot of work. So, yeah.
All right, go ahead and give us the sort of basic rundown, like where, when, what the, you know, what the tournament's like, how many rounds, that kind of thing.
Okay, well, for those who were here 4 years ago, the neighborhood will be familiar. We're like a block away from where we were then. And so that means, for those who weren't here, it means we're right by Grant Park and where all the museums are, and there's tons of restaurants and bars around, lots of things to do, lots of touristy things to do. Lots of places to have fun, including I've learned of a new gem downtown where you can go and get a cocktail on a rooftop overlooking the park where I would like to take you guys.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to make that happen.
I'm in.
So, you know, that's so great location. This year we're going to be in Roosevelt University's vertical campus. So in 2012, this building was actually going up. And it overlooks the hotel where we were in 2012,
yeah.
And it's now completed. So it's a dorm, but it's new. It hasn't been ravaged by time and freshmen yet.
Aww.
And it's just, as you look at the skyline from the lake, there's this, it's this blue glass building that kind of zigzags up 32 stories, I think. And the dorms start on the 15th floor. They go up to the 32nd floor. So every dorm room has like a floor-to-ceiling windows with great views. So that's going to be pretty cool for those who choose to stay in the dorms.
Well, I'm going to be there.
Yeah. Most of us are there to play diplomacy, and we're going to offer 5 rounds of hot diplomacy action, same format that we had in 2012. So we'll do 2 rounds on Friday the 24th.
Yeah,
including our hat night.
Friday. Yeah,
we'll be playing standard diplomacy with hats. We're not playing Chicago hat.
Chicago hat. Okay, that's fine. Right. That's good. It's for a championship event. I think it's appropriate to not play.
We likely will have some sort of prize for the best and our most creative hat.
Okay.
Saturday we'll have 2 rounds, including the team round Saturday morning, and then and we'll also be doing the hobby, you know, meeting to determine where the 2018 WC will be. That'll be Saturday morning. And then Sunday, there will be a final round, including a top board, which is something when we presented the bid 2 years ago, we weren't planning to do this time around, but that's since come around. I think, you know, following the coverage, the reporting on social media last year out of Milan,
yeah,
I think was pretty exciting for people. And then we've been talking with some guys at webdiplomacy.net.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about trying to sort of broadcast a game each round, culminating in the top board on Sunday, on web diplomacy as if it were a live game.
Yeah.
So, and they've made some modifications to their site, including they've incorporated the scoring system we'll be using, which is sum of squares again, and some other features to try to make that work. And frequent badgering emails from the Australian Peter McNamara all convinced me that we should do a top board.
Nice. Well, so, we're planning on covering it.
As good a time as any to talk about what we're thinking of doing, which is some kind of a watch the top board. I mean, we're not going to be on the top board. Who are we?
Yeah, we're not. So, I mean, if there's some miracle one of us is on the top board, I mean, we'll roll with it. But, you know. if past performance is any indication.
Yeah.
Right.
Presuming the likely happens,
you know, the format really caters to your guys' level of play. There are 2 drop rounds.
Oh, that's nice.
you know, I like that. I need a warm up round or two to kind of work all the bugs out.
Exactly.
I like to sleep through one myself, accidentally. Really,
The tournament that really got me hooked on the hobby was the third one I attended. It was WC in D.C. in 2005, and it was a 5-round thing, and it was 3 out of 5 rounds.
Oof.
And I really liked it. It catered to my style of play, too.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
And,
I mean,
I think playing with a safety net was kind of fun. And
you really can just skip one, like if you like.
You
like
can, it. And like I'm a guy who likes to. I like the challenge of trying to play 5 rounds, although I'll be TDing this year. But
yeah.
But there are people who don't want to do that, and now they can just play one round a day Or for local players who, you know, maybe they can only come for one day, they still, at least in their mind, can compete because they'll get two, you know, they'll have two scores.
Yeah.
So I love the what we did in Vancouver 9 years ago when we had six rounds and they all counted.
But, yeah.
You know.
That was a sickness.
There's something to be said for the drop round.
I stand by that. I thought that was amazing. Yes, there were tears. But
yes, some of them were Nathan's.
True, yeah. But I stand by it. That's brilliant.
Well, it's like the five rounds is like the equivalent of a marathon for diplomacy players, and six rounds is like the extreme marathon.
Well,
like,
it's an Ironman, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right.
No. At the top of a volcano. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So what we were saying is we're planning on doing some sort of coverage of the board. We're going to bring our equipment there. We're not going to sit for 8 hours or 6 hours just, you know, doing a baseball play-by-play, but we're going to figure out.
Right.
Because we'll die if we try and do that.
I'm not going to turn out well. Yeah. It won't be good radio, but we're going to do something that we haven't figured out exactly what it's going to be, but it's going to be probably every season.
We're going to be
talking about it. We're thinking about doing it actually live. Instead of recording it and putting it out, but actually doing it live that people can check in.
Record it and also stream it on Twitch, maybe, or something. It's all up in the air, but we want to do something to that effect where if you really feel like hearing our thoughts as the game is unfolding, great. Otherwise, we'll cut them down and put them in podcast form and try and say a little something every season.
Yeah.
What's happened, and people, of course, can follow along with the web diplomacy guys and see what the actual moves are that way. So that seems like
we'll do it away from everybody. It's our thought.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually I haven't booked this yet, but I'm trying to decide whether we want to have a separate conference room for the top board, which would lend itself to what you're doing, also.
Yeah. Either way, doesn't matter to us. We're not gonna. I mean. The one thing that we don't want to do is like actually be hassling the people who are actually trying to like play for the world championship.
They're trying to win the world championship.
Yeah,
we're not going to promote the hobby, right?
Right.
So. We're not. Yeah, we're trying to get people excited about it, not piss the people playing off.
Yeah,
that's probably not the end goal.
Right. Unless we're on the top board, in which case that'll be the goal. But
We have no other chance.
Right.
So anyway, that's the plan, Jim, which I think we had talked to you about.
I think it sounds great.
I think it's going to be.
And it's, I think Chris Martin had been talking about maybe doing some dabbling with Periscope. I'm sure people will be live tweeting and people will be updating on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how much it's changed and just really even.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to Snapchat the hell out of it, man. I don't I don't know what that means.
It seems
dick pic.
Yeah, right. That's probably what I'll do.
Right. A thousand of them. Just over and over and over again. No, and it is interesting, Jim, maybe, I think you were on the forefront of this. It seems like 2-3 years ago, every big tournament got its own, like, everyone just decided to do a hashtag.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
It was like 2-3 years ago, it's like, you just make up. It's not just the name of the tournament. There's something that'll happen. Like, that'll be the hashtag for it. It's just interesting that has kind of arisen in the last couple of years.
And I've been trying to get out ahead of it with our event. So this year I've been trying to use Deja Moot as our hashtag. That's best intentions. Who knows? Something crazy could happen on night one that could become the new hashtag. So
A meme, even?
Yeah.
Speaking of night one, we are going to be doing some sort of welcome party on Thursday, the 23rd of June.
Oh, great.
You know, for the travelers, like we did last time. Perfect. I don't know if it'll be a trivia again, but it'll be something. It'll be fun, and there'll probably be karaoke involved.
I remember one of those welcome parties.
And then I remember karaoke happening.
I remember karaoke, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Nathan played a trick on me at that karaoke that I remember.
What was my trick?
You put in the same song I was going to sing, like, and asked if you could go first, and then it was like, I was like, right next, and the guy was like, you can't sing that song again. Like, I'm sorry.
Oh, it sounds like something I would do.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. I love being reminded about how hilarious I am years later. That's really good. That's really great. So, Jim, while we have you on the line,
Yeah, we may as well talk about diplomacy.
No. One of the other things that we were thinking about as we were like, oh, we're going to talk to Jim. What's a good thing to be chatting about? And one thing we came up with was sort of like meta diplomacy, which we haven't really talked about that much on the show. Maybe Eric, who is the parliamentarian and historian, can tell me I'm wrong about that. But I don't think we've talked about it that much.
That was so many big words.
I'm sorry. Parliamentarian.
Yeah, I got it. Oh. Yeah. We haven't really. I guess the idea, like what we thought we'd get into is like we did an episode about like how to approach your first tournament.
Yeah.
Sure. And then we also did an April Fool's episode about the same thing. what we haven't really talked about is like playing in a really big tournament. I got to hypothesizing about, well, what if someone's been to a tournament now?
Yeah.
Or two or three, but they haven't been to Worlds. And maybe they still don't know some of the people. Like maybe they know the other people that have gone from their city, or, you know, maybe they even just live in Chicago and hey, there's this Worlds thing that's going on here, but they've never been to it before. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts to succeed, Jim?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is that, and we're seeing this locally with some of our more casual players who are balking at attending because they're intimidated. And so I would say the first thing is that players shouldn't be intimidated by the idea of a world. And I think that's because the size of the tournament, there's going to be a lot of great players, and we're going to have at least six former world champions.
Yep.
And plenty of, you know, North American champions, and plenty of people have won tournaments, but maybe not, you know, one of the big ones at Grand Prix winners. It's going to be a talented field of players, but there's also going to be a lot of people who are showing up just because it's an opportunity to play in a world championship and they think it's cool. And there'll be a lot of people who are playing in their first tournament, you know, and they've decided to make the trip to Chicago because it's close or because it's a fun city to visit or, the draw is playing in a world tournament. So the talent tends to be a little more diluted, I think, in the big tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my first thing would be don't be intimidated,
yeah.
You know? And then I think another key to when we're talking about metagaming and whether you're playing in a league like we do where we have this ongoing, basically an ongoing tournament over a year or in a tournament, it, of course, lends itself to metagaming. But even if you're playing just a one-off game of diplomacy, one of the keys to success is to understand what the other player's motivations are.
Right.
And when you're playing, in a tournament or in a league, it's a lot easier to do that. But I think the first thing you want to find out is before you start trying to use metagame to your advantage is the motivation of the player you're talking to, because there are going to be a lot of people who are just there for the experience.
Sure.
They don't care at all about winning. They have no illusions about winning the tournament. They just want to experience it. They want to play with people from all over the world or whatever. And so when you start talking to, you know, player A about why you should stab his ally, you know, that guy's leading the tournament or whatever, or you need to protect, you know, my best Russia or whatever, you can put somebody off pretty easily and get the opposite reaction that you're expecting. So I think the first thing you need to know is, like, when you're going in, like, are you talking to somebody who cares?
What a great point.
Yeah, that's
good. Yeah, because all that best Russia-type metagaming and all that, like, he's the tournament leader, you have to attack him.
It's off-putting to people who don't, you know, who the person, and it can be, you know, maybe it's a little unrealistic for those people to go into a tournament and expect to have, you know, play three one-off games in a tournament.
Yeah.
But that's what they're there to do, you know, and once if you understand that, you know, you don't want to be talking metagame with them. So as kind of someone who's new to the scene, if you do want to try to use the metagame, then one of the most important things I think you can do is know what's going on. And the best way to do that, I think, is by talking to the other players in between rounds. And, you know, newsflash, diplomacy players love to talk about their results.
We gossip.
Right? Yeah.
And we brag and we complain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes in nauseating detail, but you ask questions and hey, they'll tell you.
Yep.
And it's a good way to meet other people, and get your face known.
Yep.
You know, make new friends, whatever, and enjoy a drink or get a meal with people. and hear about how they're doing. And it's, you know, we might have 10 boards around again like we did last time.
Nice.
So you may not be able to keep your, you know, figure out who all the 10 board toppers were after a round, but you can figure out who a lot of them were.
Yeah, and that's a thing that is for the kind of try-hard players like you're talking about, the people who care about their best Russia and that sort of thing. That's the sort of thing they fill their time with in between rounds, right? They want nothing more than to find out how your round went and who did good on it and how the Russia
and
was.
And it's, you know, you're genuine about it. You enjoy talking with these people and you love talking about the game. We all do. But, you know, your ulterior motive is to gather this information that you can potentially use in subsequent rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the smaller the tournament, the easier, you know, if you're in a three-board tournament, then you should know, going into round two, who the three board toppers were.
Right.
You know, who are the guys leading the tournament? You know, with 10 boards, it's going to be harder, but you can get a lot of that information. And then, like, using an example of from Weasel Moon a couple of years ago, I had skipped the first round, and I was playing Turkey, and two guys in Austria and Italy were coming after me, and they were two of the three board toppers in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to use that to, you know, like, one of them was Graham Woodring, and he basically said, you know, screw you, I'm going to stick with my alliance.
Yeah.
But the other guy, he was Edwin Turnage, and he raised an eyebrow at that.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, why don't I want to help the guy who I'm tied with, right? And so I was able to drive a wedge in that alliance. Eventually the French entered the Med, and I ended up topping the board. But it was because, you know, the argument that eventually worked was, well, you know, why do you want to help the guy who, you know, who's leading the tournament? You're trying to chase him. You need a better result than him, and you're helping him get a good result.
Yep.
So, you know, what's interesting, and this is a slight tangent, but we've definitely given that advice in the past. I think it holds true. Like, if you're not well known or you are new to the tournament experience, definitely spend time talking to the people about what their results are.
Yeah.
You're going to learn a lot. But one thing that occurred to me is this is a little trivia, but back in the day, maybe 15 years ago, many tournaments were in the habit of posting the standings after every round. It would show where people were. And a lot of us objected to that mostly because people felt like they were targeted. But it occurs to me right now, one really good reason not to do that is it forces people to go out and get that, and gather that information on their own, which only helps the community grow. Which I really hadn't really put that together.
And
so I thought that's kind of interesting.
I remember being stunned at my first couple of big tournaments about how important that was to the people that were trying hard to just like sling back and forth that information. It was like the being on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange or something, where someone would be like, Barnes is at 15, you know, and people were like really excited about exchanging that info. And so if you're like less of a known person and you're actually trying to be competitive, like the takeaway from that is that the exchanging that information can benefit you in a lot of ways. First of all, you make friends, and that never hurts. Like, if you have an interesting conversation with somebody and then you wind up on a board with them the next round, that's a thing at a big tournament. And I may be stealing your thunder. You may have been about to get to that, but
let me just direct this a little bit, because I think we should have, I should have, if we were better interviewers, we would have started this way. Assuming that this is someone's first WDC, what are things that they should anticipate that are unlike other tournaments, or maybe are more important at WDC than other tournaments? Like, what information would you want to give to folks who are on the fence about going because they're intimidated or whatever? What should they expect?
Right.
Just a couple of things.
Other than the $1,000 buy-in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the biggest hurdle.
Yeah.
That I think would be good to like kind of just tick off a couple of things, like what occurs to you.
I would say, well, first of all, there are going to be players from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while everyone will be speaking English, there might be some people who are harder for you to understand. So there's, you know, that's probably an obvious thing to say, but there will be that.
And then, of course, there's the Chris Martin advice. If they have an accent, they're probably really good at diplomacy because they bothered flying that far in order to go to the tournament. So they probably care a little. Yeah.
But, you know, I would also say I think the deeper the tournament goes, the more competitive it's going to get.
Yeah.
And the way it's structured is, you know, your three of four rounds will dictate who's going to play for that championship on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people might see an opportunity for a big result and go for it early, for sure. But I think, you know, as the guys who are coming and expecting to play on that final board, mm-hmm. you know, when they see their chances dwindling, it's going to get more intense and more cutthroat, I think, probably, yeah. like that Saturday night round,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a thing, is there is some sort of a culture, especially at, like, these big sort of marathon events with the five rounds and this and that. There's sort of a culture of don't do too well too early, or yeah. you know, some people will attempt to make the argument, let's just call the draw now. Come on, it's Friday. It's first round Friday. Let's not stress ourselves out. Nobody needs too big of a result right now. And that,
right.
you don't have to listen to
don't
that.
Don't listen to that.
If you see a that solo, is garbage. Get a solo, you know.
Well, I kind of feel like tournament diplomacy is sort of like trying to hit a baseball. And,
yeah.
and you're up there and you're looking for your pitch and you're following off some tough pitches, you
right.
know. But when you get the one you hit, you got to nail it, right?
Yep.
And so you're going to have some tough boards. But when you get the board that everything's going just right, you got to go for the big result.
Yeah. Exactly.
Never, exactly. ever. If anyone's telling you, listeners, if anyone is telling you to soft play something, don't go too hard, don't press your full advantage because of, I don't know, being like it's too early in the tournament,
it's
or
right.
it's the night, oh, it's really late and everyone wants to sleep, or, you know,
right.
basically any reason. Don't do it,
right.
ever, because exactly what Jim said, like, there are only so many pitches that you're going to be able to hit. It's a
yeah,
small
exactly.
number. You may only get one this tournament. If you get it and it's round one, go all the way. I don't care if it's
yeah,
to 3 in the morning.
Also, I love the idea that some listener is going to be like, oh, no, I never call a draw because I listened to that show, and Jim Merrick and Nathan told me to just never call it. Like,
oh,
yeah.
Seriously, I definitely, I'll buy a drink for anybody that does that. I will definitely, if you can show me that you are delaying a game because of the advice you heard on this show, I will buy you a drink. You're amazing.
Yeah. So, and I guess my initial point was that
yeah.
I think the sense of desperation for the ones who don't have the results that they need will start setting in on Saturday night, and that's probably where the competition will be the most intense, I
yep.
would think. But another piece of advice I think is important, like the very first tournament I attended was WDC in 1998, Chapel Hill.
Mm.
And, you know, I was a hotshot postal player at the time, and
is that a
there's
thing?
A lot of hotshot online players, you know,
yeah.
and it's easy to convince yourself that you're great at this game and better than everybody else.
Oh yeah,
and kind of, you know, and by the nature of those games, it's often the person who you can do really well in postal games and online games simply by out communicating everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you go into this tournament and you've got these high expectations for yourself. And so I drew Italy in my first round. I got a 3-way draw and I was thinking, this is easy, right? And then I played two of the next three rounds and I was eliminated in both of them.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, you're going, enjoy the experience and enjoy some competition with some of the best players around. Play hard, you know, look for the result that you can really, you know, take advantage of, but have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're going to have fun playing up to five rounds of diplomacy, meeting people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
having a good time. That's why you're there.
Yep. And if you make
and
the top
board,
and if
you get on the top board, play for the championship, that's icing on the cake.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just I can't agree with you more, Jim.
This
Seriously.
Is like Nathan's thing that he's been ranting about on the show lately. It's
yeah.
just like people and their unrealistic, like. They just think every board's supposed to go their way, and when it doesn't,
right.
they've been done wrong.
Right, and it's the outrage that somehow that everyone else wronged them and they were cheated
mm-hmm.
out of their. You just it's a tough game.
Yeah, right.
And you're
absolutely.
Not gonna win all the time. And at WDC, and this is seriously, listeners, we're not trying to at all intimidate you at all.
No.
This is not an intimidating experience. It's just these people have played hundreds and hundreds of games of diplomacy.
Yeah, they're going to be better than you, probably.
It does bring up a point, though, that I just kind of thought of that I wanted to throw in there, which is, like, sometimes a person at WDC or at DipCon or you know, at one of the big events will make a move that's a little dirtier than what they'd usually do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll stab a game-long ally after convincing them that they're never going to stab them because they're close personal friends and they love each other. Yeah. And they, you know, they were the best man at each other's wedding, and then they stab, kind of a thing. And the explanation for that is, hey, it's WDC. Like, if you're not going to play to win there, when are you going to play to win?
Yeah.
Right? So...
Yeah. And there's people who they'll drag a game out for,
right.
It's not so bad with drop dead timing and a central clock.
Right.
You know, you can play a really long game, you could play a 12-year game in 6 hours with our timing structure.
Okay.
You know, and it just gets faster from there. But there are still people there, you know, who are willing to play all night to get that result that they need to get on the top board.
Yep. They'll drag a game out. They'll. You know, if they feel like they can get a tournament director ruling in their favor because, like, the piece was not where it was supposed to be, you know.
Oh, wow. Like,
yeah.
You're bringing up some old stories. Yeah,
people save the shenanigans for these right. events a
and
little
like,
bit.
I think what you're saying is expect that this tournament will be a little bit more intense.
Yeah. And like, not always in, like, a super negative way. It's not just the stabs. It's just, I mean, like, I don't know. I guess, like, I'm thinking back on times I got stabbed when I was sure that the guy couldn't possibly, you know, just wouldn't do it out of the goodness of his heart. And then he said afterwards, hey, it's WDC.
Right. Like,
what am I going to do it?
This is the big show.
Yeah.
This is the big show. This is what ostensibly people have been working for. And any of the other motivations they might have had in other tournaments and other house games, they're really gonna push that to the side because this is the main stage. It's not just you wanting to do well and competing against other people. You're also, you know, showcasing your abilities or this is your chance to be a really good diplomacy player in front of pretty much all the diplomacy players that care.
Right. So if you go in there like prepared for the try hard players to do that to you, you're going to have a good time no matter what.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Enjoy the experience. Play hard against great competition. Just manage your expectations.
And, yep.
You know, understand that really until there's a championship of the universe, this is as high as it gets.
Yeah.
This is it. You know.
This is it.
We're coming for you, Venus.
So you said you're doing some of Square's scoring, and we've talked about this on the show before. But can you give us a really brief, like 30,000-foot overview of it?
So, yeah, it's known as a divide and conquer system. It's center-based, and the idea is that obviously you want to top the board. If you can't solo, you want to top the board, but you also want to have a separation between you and the next guy, and ideally the bounds, the centers that you don't own are pretty evenly distributed among the other players.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a 10 where the other guys have sixes, fives, towards whatever, that's a really good result. It's probably a better result than, you know, you're at 13 and your ally's at 12.
Yeah. Right. And if you go 10, 9, 8, 7, that's not really that great at all.
That's not so great. Like, we just played our 300th game on Wednesday, the club's 300th game.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Hall of Fame, for
thanks.
Sure.
And it was a great top board style game, a time limited top board style game, and that everybody was in it, and the final counts were like 7-7, 6-6-6, you know, and a 2. So, you know, it was tight, and the scores, nobody really got a great score.
Right.
It was a lot of fun, but it wasn't a great score. But, you know, if you can top with 4 centers more than anybody else, that's a good score.
Yeah.
If you can get more than half the points of, you know, more than 50 points, that's a really good score.
And
in a tournament, what you're doing is trying to put a package of good scores together, right? So if you can put a couple of board tops and one of them is like a more than 50, or if you can solo a board, that you have a really good shot of getting a seat at that final board, and there anything can happen.
I was just going to say, if you do happen to hit 18, is it like 18-0-0-0-0-0-0? Is that the way that
if you get 18, so every game's worth 100 points, and if you get 18, they're all yours.
Right.
So you get 100 points.
Right.
Okay. And then everybody
so
else
do that,
too thick.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right, and it, depending on how many solos there are. So in 2012, you know, we had 46 boards total in the five rounds.
Yeah, and you had a lot
and
of solos.
And there were, I think, six solos.
Yeah, there were a lot of solos.
Board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so as long as it's not, as long as they're not boatloads of solos, if you get a solo, you got a really good job of earning a seat at that final table.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the important message there, obviously, is it's not, if you haven't played some of Squares before, it's really important to watch what your neighbor is doing or what your ally is doing.
Well, yeah, we saw this, you know, on Wednesday night. I started out playing really well in the West. I was having a good game, but in the sum of squares, it doesn't matter if you're having a good game, if someone on the other sphere is having a great game, because, you know, your 8-center result against his 12 is going to be shit. You know,
yep.
It's not. So, can we swear on the show? Sorry, I
yeah,
shouldn't.
Sure, whatever.
So, you know, you it's important to kind of manage the whole board to the extent that you can. Sometimes you can't bother about that because you're too worried about not being the odd man out in your sphere. But
sure.
When you can, you want to be thinking about how your moves are affecting what's going on the other side so that, you know, nobody's getting too far ahead of you. You want to mm-hmm. be getting too, you want to be getting far ahead of them. And it tends to be more fluid. Not always. There's still people who are going to play their usual sort of draw-based alliance game, that, not really caring that they'll get 30 points or 35 mm-hmm. points, you know.
And I guess another maybe way to approach this, if, I mean, if you want to go to this thing and try as hard as you possibly can to get on the top board, then all of what we just said applies.
Sure.
If you want to, another thing you could do in this scoring system is say, I'd like to finish in the top half of everybody that went to that tournament, or the top third of everybody who went to that tournament. And so, you should try and do the best that you can every game. But walk away sort of like, that was okay with a, you know, like a strong second place finish or something
right.
like that. If you want to set some goals for yourself that are like, I want to have fun at this tournament and like do well, but I'm not thinking I'm probably going to make the top board unless everything falls into place. You could also just say like, hey, if I walk away with 20 points on this board, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for me.
And when you look at, you know, you're trying to put that package of three results together, that's
yep.
20 points or 30 points. That might be what you need
that's
to
true.
Go along with the board top that you get in another round.
That's true. If you just get three or four solid results, then, you know,
yeah.
you know, and maybe go after a best country, that kind of
sure.
thing. And by right. the way, the best countries are just the highest score in that scoring system by any particular country. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily centers, it's score.
Right.
That's
right. So you could have like a 16 center Russia and lose to theoretically a 10 center
yeah.
Russia if that 10
right.
center Russia just
the,
happened to be
right.
amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Bigger.
Right.
That's the way Jake used to always describe
bigger.
That scoring system. But don't just be bigger
yeah.
than everybody else.
Bigger,
that's
yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you think at WAC, we ran this exact system. We did some of squares and we did a central clock.
Right.
So how do you think that the central clock plays into the system at all? Do you think it enhances the system? Do you think it detracts from the system? Or what, I guess, talk about the timing and how it's going to work with relation to it.
Well, I think that the main thing about the central clock is, as we all know, diplomacy is a very long game. So you can speed it up using a central clock. And for those who don't have a play, that means that the clock is always running. So as you're adjudicating the moves, that's you're on negotiation time for the next turn.
Okay.
And there's no order writing phase, right? So when the deadline sounds, your orders are in the box, you start reading on the clock, and when we start, the structure is 18 minutes in the spring, 16 minutes in the fall. And I think in 1905, it goes down to 17:15. And then in 1907, it's down to 15:13. So you don't have as much negotiation to do
yeah.
usually later in the game, but it's pretty fast.
It could be
pretty stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as how, if that affects the system, I'm not sure if it has, I'm not sure how it complements the system. I think it's you know, it gets your adrenaline going
right.
for sure.
Right.
You know, maybe you're going to, you know, maybe it helps the fluidity of the game because you're making quick decisions.
Yep.
Maybe.
Well,
you know.
And don't let's not forget that, like,
one piece of like it just golden advice, which is that people will waste your time on purpose, especially on a fast clock like this. And don't be afraid to just say, Mr. Person, I'm very sorry.
No, but that's it.
And there's also people who will waste your time not on purpose. That just that's their style. Is they want to have really lengthy conversations where they're thinking, you know, 2 years down the road and talking about, you know, builds, potential builds in the spring. And there isn't time to have that deep conversation, you know, later in the game.
And it's important to know, like, just a pro tip: write down your where your pieces are. While things are getting adjudicating, like even before they're done adjudicating, once your country has been adjudicated, you know where your pieces are, write them down right then. Do not wait for the 1 minute buzzer and then frantically start trying to write your orders.
Right. David Norman's sultry sister starts counting down. That's not when you want to be trying to figure out where that tenth piece is.
That's right.
Write them down.
Also, don't smoke cigarettes, pee, or eat. At any point during a round of
the stomach cramps are intense, but worth it.
Wear a diaper. That's
No, the reason I was asking about vis-a-vis the scoring system was a divide and conquer center-based system like some of Square's. It thrives on fluidity, I guess.
Dividing and conquering.
Right.
Well, it needs to have that. It can't ossify because if it sets too quickly, then it's basically a draw-based system, and the whole reason to have some of Squares is to kind of avoid that sort of early game setting of the alliances, go to the stalemate line, and huddle up for your three-way
draw. You're kind of like in the mid-game, and you're battling for control of the stalemate line, and there's four or five powers doing that, then you probably misplayed your position.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So if your game winds up as one of those 7-7, 6-6-6, you've all done something wrong.
Yeah, you've done something wrong. Yeah. So the thing about the added time pressure is I find it interesting because it does one of two things depending on the player. It either makes the player clamp down and go, I can't do anything, this is as best as I can do, and I'm just going to stick to this 7 whatever. Or it motivates people to say, okay, I don't have time to really weigh the pros and cons. I just know I am not number one on this board, or I am one less than the top guy. I need to just brashly flip things over.
Yep.
Which is that tension of having the time pressure with the sum of squares, I think is really, plays to the strength of the system of getting that interaction, let's just blow all this crap up, let's restart it. I mean, obviously my style of play is a little more chaotic, so I thrive on that, but
I like to blow things up too.
it's really fun. So mostly just think about it when you're on that stalemate line. Don't just sit there.
Yeah.
You got options. Yeah. You got options.
I agree. That's you want to keep it fluid and look for your opportunities to grow and I think it's a fun scoring system to play, and I really enjoy the pressure of the central clock.
Yeah, I have for years. It's really excellent. So let's. What else do we want to? What else can we? Is there anything else we want to tell people who are on the fence about going to WDC? Which is going to be, by the way, I don't know if we made it clear. It's going to be a fantastic event. The Weasels put on a great show.
Chicago is amazing.
Chicago is a great town.
It's
the venue they've chosen is going to be actually perfect for this type of thing. People are lodged in the same place and it's reasonably priced.
We've got like 30 people already who are booked at the dorm, which I think will be fun. The dorm's it's 87 and change a night for a single. There will be shared bathrooms, but it'll be no more than 2 to 4 rooms sharing a bathroom.
Okay.
And if that's too much, there's plenty of hotels where you can try to, book with somebody else and try to find a better rate. But Chicago in June, it's expensive.
Yeah.
But there's a hostel right across the street, and it's a nice hostel. You can get a bed for $40 a night or cheaper in a nice hostel. So, if $87.50 is not cheap enough for you, there's $40 across the street.
Nice.
But, it's going to be... anyway, I just wanted to make sure that people, that our listeners have
understood
that it's going to be a really good event.
if you're, you know, if you love this hobby, and why would you be listening to the show if you don't, right?
Because you hate yourself.
This is the signature event of our hobby is World DiffCon. It only comes here to the States at most, or to North America at most, every other year. And sometimes it's every 3 years.
Yep.
It's in the middle of the country. It's not always going to be in the middle of the country, and I can guarantee we're not going to be back in Chicago in 4 years. And Chicago is pretty easy to get to, right?
Whether
you're driving in or flying in, it's inexpensive. We've tried to make this tournament inexpensive for the attendees. It's expensive for us to be doing it there, but you know, we're making it work. And it's, you know, why not? Come on out, have fun, meet the guys who do Diplomacy Cast. Make new friends.
That's right. We'll be signing autographs. Yeah, we'll have a booth.
We're definitely going to have a booth Saturday. At this convention. Yeah, and I think it's really important for our listeners to understand that, like, you know, the Weasels, they go out of their way. Like, they'll pick you up at the airport. They'll hold your hand all the way to the event. They'll tuck you in at night.
Jim specifically will tuck all of you. You know,
That's part of my duties as a tournament director. Yeah, to tuck everybody in.
Guaranteed.
Right.
Thursday night, like. We haven't firmed up the details of the welcome party, but it's going to be fun. And, like, I led you guys on a merry, you know, pub crawl.
It was great.
Pub crawl last time. It was a lot of fun. Oh, and we had a good time.
Yeah.
It was really good.
The one I remember was, like, we went to some places.
In the rain, as I recall. Yeah. Pouring rain.
But we won't do that this time. Yeah. It's
going to be beautiful this year.
Sunny and 72.
And, do yourself a favor if you're on the fence. Definitely go to this event. We've given you all the tools that you will possibly need. You know it's going to be a little bit more intense. You know it's going to be a little bit more, everyone's going to have their game face on. But it's also going to be a lot of fun.
And there's going to be plenty of boards that are just fun, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It just depends on, it's all random. The draws are random, and it depends on,
I love how you sound like me. It's all random. We do it all randomly.
I promise.
It's all random. I promise it's random.
But also, a big feel, too, you know, you're not going to see the same people. So even if you're stuck on a board with just some guy who, you know, drives you crazy for 6 hours with their level of intensity or whatever it is, it's unlikely you're going to be on that board with that person again. You know, there's we right now we have 67 people signed up. We had 80 in 2012, and there's, you know, we have 40 some odd days. I think we're going to be right around there again.
I haven't signed up this year. So 68 in pencil. Yeah.
I mean, it's. I was just gonna cap off, you know, my compliments to you guys to just say, you know, the same level of intensity like that people are bringing. There's an equal amount of wanting to get together and have fun and really, you know, it's the big show. So people really want to win, but they also, as soon as they're off the board, they really want to have fun meet people and do, because this is the time to do it, because this is when you see all the people you haven't seen all year. Mm-hmm. Like, for a lot of people, this is the only, like, a lot of diplomacy players, this is the only event they're going to. They're not on the tournament circuit anymore. Maybe they were in the past. And this is the one chance to meet all those people that you haven't seen in a year. So as much, as intense as they are on the board, I promise you guys, they're just as intense and having a great time and being welcoming and celebrating the fact that we're able to once a year get together and, you know, have our little, you know, moot, you know,
Get together. And it's an opportunity to meet some of the personalities that maybe you've read about or listened to on Diplomacy Cast. But also it's an opportunity to become one of those personalities,
right?
You know, to join our merry band and become one of us. You know, he does these and travels around to events and, you know, kind of gets sucked into this pastime that we love.
Yeah, definitely. Do something awesome on a board and everyone will talk about you and you know, like,
there's always that guy. That every WDC, there's that guy that no one knew who was like, "How did you see Randy? Holy crap, out of nowhere." Yeah, he just stuck that knife, like, he just broke it off in Chris Martin. It was amazing. Like, there's always that one guy that is just an unknown that does something spectacular that everybody talks about. It's amazing. Be that guy.
Or woman. That could be the hashtag. Be that guy.
or yes, you're right.
We'll run that one by Siobhan, see what she thinks.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think that's it. Any parting thoughts, Jim? Anything that you want to let someone know who's on the fence about it or just love about WDC that you want to share?
I would say, take the plunge and maybe use it as an opportunity to reach out to some of your online foes, or guys in the club that you play with, whatever, and encourage them to go with you.
More fun.
It's easier if you have a traveling companion. Yeah. We'll welcome you even if you're alone. You'll find that we're a welcoming group, but it's easier maybe if you go with somebody.
Yeah.
My first tournament, as I said, was 1998, and I went to specifically to meet these three guys who I was in a postal game with. You know, and we said, hey, let's do this. You know, we went to Chapel Hill, met, really took our friendship, you know, which was just existing, via post and to kind of the next level. And I got three lifelong friends out of it.
That's amazing. That's the kind of stories that we want to hear.
Yeah.
Anything else, Eric, you want
to? I just feel like Jim's waited so long to be on the show again that, like, we should just let him talk about some other stuff now. I don't know. This is a really exciting moment for Jim.
I think we can let Jim go. We want to thank Jim for being here. And, I know Eric and I are going to see you in like 6 weeks, 5 weeks, and 42 days.
I can't wait.
And it's going to be amazing.
Or by the time this is
it's going to be a great time. And I talk about the work that goes into it, but it's a labor of love. And, we can't wait to put this event on for the hobby and welcome everybody. And, we're really looking forward to it.
Thanks for staying up late with us.
All right, guys.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Yeah. Take it easy.